Wake up, Chicago. This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, what's up, Chicago? Good morning. Good morning, Cook County, Illinois, America. Those who are listening all around the world, yes, you have tuned into yet another live broadcast of the Santita Jackson Show, and I am not Santita, as you have figured out right away. My name is Brandon Johnson, filling in for the great Santita Jackson. Again, this, I guess in the last couple of weeks, I've had the chance to fill in for Santita. Check that out. I'm really honored to be here. I'm really thankful, too, of the work that Santita Jackson does every single morning here, Progressive Talk Radio. And we are live on Facebook, so you can check us out there. Why don't you do that now? You go to Facebook right now, WCPT, Progressive Talk Radio, and we're looking forward to a really good discussion today. I mean, so many things that are happening all over the city of Chicago, Illinois, around the country, around the world. But you could tune in live. And then when you get to the broadcast, why don't you do us a favor? Why don't you share the broadcast? I've just done it. And so now my family is like, dude, check you out. They had initially had given up on me, my family. But Santita has restored the hope in my family that one day their brother Brandon will do something extraordinary. So I get a chance to be on the airwaves with you all, and I'm very honored. I want you to call in today, of course, 773-763-9278. Again, that's 773-763-9278. I believe you'll find the discussion enjoyable today. I do. Pretty confident of that. And so, of course, if you are on social media, again, share the broadcast so people around the world and all of your friends can just join in together around very, very strong progressive talk radio. Of course, you could do it the old-fashioned way, 8:20 a.m. And then, of course, we are on the World Wide Web, WCPT820.com. Again, my name is Brandon Johnson, filling in for Santita Jackson. This is the Progressive Talk Radio, the largest, I believe, in fact. And the facts actually do matter here. You know, getting up this morning, I'm always, you know, struck by individuals who have to start their day 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. And so those of you who are out there who are starting your day, you're on your way to work, God bless you. I haven't had to get up this early to come to work in a long time. So for those of you who may not be familiar with me, and that's probably 99% of you all, I think I have a 1% name recognition. I'm a public school teacher, and I taught middle school for a number of years in Chicago and taught high school. And, you know, getting up early to prepare for your students, you know, just becomes second nature. I didn't realize, like, how early it was until, you know, the last couple of weeks I've had to come into work. And, you know, I'm a public transportation guy, and, you know, it's early. And the faces on public transportation at 5 o'clock in the morning, absolutely stunning and amazing. And those of you, of course, who are ending your shift, those of you who work the third shift, which I usually do that once upon a time, getting through school and some other careers that I thought I was going to pursue. God bless you all, too. And thanks for tuning in with us. So much to talk about today. I'm going to go through the headline news. But before I do, you all, I'm not sure if Chicago is aware of just, and maybe you are, of just the political climate that we're in right now as it relates to our progressive values and everything from our fight for public accommodations around our public schools, for affordable housing, you know, eradicating homelessness, combating violence and crime in our communities, having budgets that actually speak to the needs of people, working class families. I am looking forward to today's discussion because we're going to have a representative and a rank and file member of the National Nurses Union. I know there's a lot of talk about the Chicago Teachers Union, and I'm happy to talk about that. But that is not the only local in Chicago that is preparing for a strike. So you have the National Nurses Union. We're going to have them discuss their conditions at the University of Chicago. Those rank and file members are pushing for a fair contract that, yes, impacts the working conditions as well so that they can actually service the clients, the patients, rather, that come into the hospital. So they have had a strike authorization vote, and they're prepared to walk the picket line. We also have Local 73, SEIU, which is comprised of custodians, security guards. We refer to them as SECAs, or Special Education Classroom Assistants, workers that service Chicago Public Schools, workers who also service the Park District. I believe there's at least 7,000 members in that local that took a strike authorization vote back in July, where 97% of their members said, yes, we are prepared to walk the line in order to receive economic and racial and social justice for the people of Chicago. Wow. And of course, we have the Chicago Teachers Union that is in the midst of contract negotiations now, well over a year. Local 73, well over a year. The National Nurses Union, well over a year. And this comes at a time, ladies and gentlemen, where, and I know Santita Jackson talked about this, the shrinking middle class in Chicago and in America. I believe the numbers that Santita released a couple of days ago, once upon a time, 50% of Chicago, middle class. Now it's, you know, well under 20%. We're talking 16%. The wealth gap between families in Chicago and all over the country, between the wealthiest in this country and workers, that wealth gap continues to expand. And so now right here in the city of Chicago, we are fighting that very fight for economic justice, where families are being forced and pushed out of the city of Chicago because they cannot afford to live here. And so we're going to get into all of that. We also need to talk a little national politics as well, because there is a Democratic debate that is happening. I know it feels like we're constantly in campaign mode, because we are. It's just the stakes are just that high. And so we're going to have a good friend of mine, Richard Fowler, is expected to join us. He is on a flight right now. So hopefully that flight, everything goes well. But he is on a flight now. And we're going to talk presidential and national politics. Can we nominate a progressive candidate once? Come on, sisters and brothers. Can we nominate a progressive candidate to represent the Democratic Party? Can we do it? I want to hear from you all. Do you believe we can nominate a progressive candidate? And can a progressive actually win and beat Donald Trump? But also want to hear from you and weigh in on these other issues. Is there a real attack against working class families in Chicago, period, point blank? Is there an attack against working class families in Chicago? And so, of course, Santita has, you know, these headline news that I want to make sure that I cover. Obviously, everybody knows, if you don't know, it's 9/11. Time, of course, is moving. But, you know, we're, you know, 17 years ago, you know, back in 2001, I mean, just the emotions and the feelings around that day, and not just that day, the tragedy and the attack against our country, but even our country's response to 9/11. And there's been a lot of political debate about, you know, did we actually honor the people who lost their lives in 9/11 by actually pursuing justice in a legitimate war. But the history for today in 9/11 is that there are young people, of course, who never witnessed this, but it should always be in the forefront of our hearts and our minds in this country, and how you know, volatile the political climate can be at times, but also how vulnerable, you know, we can be. And this is why, and I believe that we have to continue to fight for justice, not just here, but even abroad. I do believe that we should lead by example. And America has certainly a long way to go. But we do remember, particularly the families on the front line that went in to the World Trade Centers to rescue. So that's today. We also have, you know, just some more national news. The civil case, I guess this is local as well. I don't know if you all remember the former Speaker of the House, Denny Hastert.
Yeah.
So there was a civil case over Hastert's hush money payments. That can go to trial after a judge's ruling. Just a tragedy there for all the families involved in that. This one is, I mean, interesting, particularly as we, you know, celebrate the life and the lives of individuals who who sacrificed during the 9/11. Mayor Lori Lightfoot is now taking aim at what she is calling a costly perk and staffing requirement for the firefighters' contract. Certainly more details around that, and she is asking for some help from the firefighters' union. And they gave her an endorsement during the runoff campaign against the president of the Cook County Board, Tony Preckwinkle. She asked for some help to relieve the city of these staffing requirements. And this is a union who endorsed her. Their answer was no. So apparently the staffing issues that we're having in the Chicago public schools is a matter that the mayor is looking to take up with the firefighters. And this is, I find this one a little bit odd, just because, you know, when it comes to, you know, frontline workers, like our firefighters, as a homeowner in Chicago, I certainly don't want to be in a position, I'm sure no one wants to be in a position where, you know, something tragic happens and there's not enough staff. Oh, in fact, I believe that's actually the case in the Chicago public schools. When tragedy happens, and trauma happens in Chicago all the time, and there aren't enough social workers, there aren't enough nurses. So should be one to watch in the future, as a particular union that actually endorsed her, and she asked them to do something they didn't want to do. So we'll see how that plays out. Elizabeth Warren, you all know, she is gaining steam all over the country. Senator Elizabeth Warren has endorsed here, right here in Illinois. She endorses Marie Newman over the current congressman, Dan Lipinski. This one should be an interesting race to watch, you all, as, you know, more and more proclaimed progressives jump into primaries to challenge the status quo. So we'll be keeping our eye on Elizabeth Warren, and we'll be talking about her later in the show, because I find her ascension to be quite fascinating in this moment, particularly as the Democratic Party is seeking a true identity in how, you know, we will approach governance, and not just simply how we plan on taking on Donald Trump. There's a bunch of other ones here. Senator Tammy Duckworth on Bolton's ouster. If you all don't know, Donald Trump has fired another person, his security advisor, John Bolton. And she just believes that that Trump just can't quite get his act together. It's been doing this for a long time, you all, Donald Trump. So Donald Trump ousted the top advisor, John Bolton, and basically said that he disagrees strongly with him. Does Donald Trump agree with anything or anybody but himself? Yeah, so that's some of the headline top news today. And, you know, something else, too, that, you know, that will get some attention today. For those of you who may have missed this, you may have missed it because it came out late yesterday. So the president of the Chicago Teachers Union actually had the opportunity to meet with the mayor of Chicago as negotiations continue to heat up, as our nurses are prepared to take to walk the picket lines, our custodial staff, our teachers' assistants and security guards, park district workers. Like, you have literally thousands of workers in the city of Chicago, thousands of workers preparing to walk the picket line, you all. It's getting real. It is real in Chicago, and there's a lot at stake. But the president of the Chicago Teachers Union, Jesse Sharkey, had a chance to meet with the mayor of Chicago, and Gregory Pratt from the Tribune is covering this. And so the president of the Chicago Teachers Union described his sit down with the mayor. And I quote, It's unclear if she is willing to listen to the needs of classroom educators and the families of our students. According to President Sharkey, she added that she doesn't, and he's quote, and I quote, she, meaning the mayor, does not bend to pressure and has yet to commit to being accountable for the commitments that she made as a candidate. So in other words, as the city of Chicago embraces the schools that all of our students deserve, there was no absolute commitment from the mayor in this one-on-one with the president of the Chicago Teachers Union. And the Chicago Teachers Union has set a strike authorization vote. Doesn't mean that they initially have to go on strike, but they have set an authorization vote for the end of the month. And contract negotiations have certainly, they've heated up, but there's still no commitment around, particularly our paraprofessionals. Again, these are our teachers' assistants, our school clerks, you know, many of whom are barely making enough to survive in the city of Chicago, making such little wages that are low wages that their families actually qualify for free and reduced lunch. Do you have full-time workers in Chicago that are living in a very low income state? And some folks, you know, who make these low wages are living in communities that are impoverished. And that's just the reality. You're living where you can afford. And I know my family, you know, we live on the west side of Chicago. We love the west side of Chicago. We live in Austin and we're homeowners there. And as much as we're working hard to, you know, advocate and protect our block and protect our communities, we know that there are people who are in poverty living all around us. And that has to change, you all. And so let's get into the conversation today. Again, the number is 773-763-9278. If you don't want to talk about the presidential campaign, the Democratic primaries, the debate that is going to take place, I believe, tomorrow evening in Houston. And now the pool of candidates is certainly reduced, at least in terms of those who will be permitted on the stage. It's going to be 10 candidates. Still a lot. But that's good. I actually don't have a problem with that. I believe that's good for democracy. I'm all about access to the ballot. For those of you who are not familiar with me, the 99.99% of you out there that are listening to the Santita Jackson Show, this is live, local, and progressive. I did have the opportunity to run for Cook County Commissioner in the 1st District, which represents the west side and western suburbs of Cook County. And having access to the ballot is important. And I was able to run and build on a very bold progressive movement that has, you know, sought to transform lives. And it was a close race, but I was able to prevail. And so I'm honored to be in this position as a public advocate, as a supporter of justice. But, you know, I believe our democracy requires a very thorough conversation. And I believe that we should not only have a thorough conversation and debate around these issues, people should, you know, be able to express their electoral and their political will through these elections. And, you know, the 10 candidates who will be on stage tomorrow night, they come from a variety of backgrounds, and it should be interesting. This is the first time that the vice president, the former vice president, Joe Biden, will be on the stage with Elizabeth Warren. You know, Senator Bernie Sanders and Vice President Joe Biden have been in the tussle before, and same thing with Senator Kamala Harris. So this should be an interesting dynamic as Senator Warren injects herself into a space that we haven't had the opportunity to engage in yet, just because we had to split the debates the first couple. So, again, we have a lot of things that we want to get to today. It's a very aggressive, bold show. I am excited, looking forward to the conversation. Again, if you are watching and tuning in on social media, Facebook, do me a favor and just share the broadcast. Our number is 773-763-9278. Do you believe that we can actually elect a progressive candidate for the Democratic Party? And do you believe a progressive candidate can actually beat Donald Trump? There's some interesting polling that's out there that I want to share with you all a little bit later, particularly Donald Trump's approval ratings. Always fascinated by his approval ratings, because it shouldn't even say approval rating. It should be like Donald Trump's rating, his disapproval. But there are people out there, believe it or not, that still like him. Whomever you are, if you want to call in and talk to me about why you like Donald Trump, I'm happy to have that conversation as well. Not really, but I will. But there are people who like him. And he's got a solid crew that rocks with him. But again, before we get into that conversation, I want to make sure that we have an opportunity to engage with the local issues that are here, and a lot of pressing issues. And I'm getting used to this, Lady B. I believe we have to take a break in a second, and then we're going to come back. So on the live line we have with us, and we're going to come back, is Elaine. I want to make sure I say her last name right. Elaine Mister. And she is one of the nurses at the University of Chicago, and she's a longtime nurse. The phone lines are available to you. She's going to talk to us about what has happened at the University of Chicago and our nurses, you all. In Chicago, we have nurses and teachers that are being disrespected and preparing for a strike because the working conditions are just not, they're not, it's not good. And we're going to hear from Elaine after the break and just talk a little bit about what's happening at the University of Chicago and how we can be supportive and what are those key issues that they are confronting. And how has the hospital responded? I mean, the University of Chicago, they certainly aren't broke. They're not broke over there. And neither is the city of Chicago, the ninth largest economy in the world, you all. Make no mistake about it. This country is flooded with cash. It's flooded with it. But it's clearly not reaching our neighborhoods. It's not reaching the front lines where people service every single day. And we're still being asked to give up more. The mayor of Chicago has not shown any commitment to the custodial staff, the security guards. The mayor of Chicago has not shown any commitment to our teachers and our paraprofessionals and our clerks. She's now asking firefighters to give back. Are we asking the wealthy to pay their fair share in taxes? Listen, it's the Santita Jackson Show. It's WCPT 820 AM. It's Progressive Talk Radio. It's where the facts matter. My name is Brandon Johnson, filling in for Santita Jackson. Can you hang in with me for the next hour or so? I'll be right back after this.
This is WCPT 820, where facts matter.
Hey, what's up, Chicago? It's the Santita Jackson Show here at Progressive Talk Radio, 820 AM, WCPT. I am not Santita Jackson. If you're just waking up or getting your day started, my name is Brandon Johnson, filling in for the great Santita Jackson. Thank you so much, sister, for all of the work that you do. Look forward to connecting with you soon. The Congressional Black Caucus Annual Convention is this week in Chicago. I'm sorry, in D.C. Annual Convention. And a lot of folks are going to be there. It should be a good time, particularly in this Democratic primary. Again, my name is Brandon Johnson, filling in for Santita Jackson today. And we have a lot going on in Chicago. And on the live line with me to help break down some of the challenges that we're facing here in Chicago is a rank and file member of the National Nurses Union. Her name is Elaine Mister, and we're talking about the nurses who are prepared to take a one-day strike. Elaine, welcome to the Santita Jackson Show.
Thank you so much. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, and thanks for asking. How are you doing? I know it's early, Elaine. I appreciate your time.
It is early, but I'm okay.
All right, good. I try not to keep you on the phone too long, but let's just get to it.
Okay.
First of all, how long have you been a practicing nurse?
I've been a nurse for 26 years.
Wow. And how has the profession changed or progressed since you began 26 years ago? Has it changed?
The nursing profession has changed in terms of the educational level now. They are now wanting nurses to have a minimum of a bachelor's degree. Before, we were taking nurses or we were hiring nurses who had diploma degrees, meaning they were trained at like your local hospitals, like Cook County, or they had some type of an associate's degree, meaning they had at least, you know, 1 or 2 years of college. But now the trend is to hire baccalaureate degree nurses who have to actually have a 4-year degree from a college.
And is that a good thing?
I think it all depends on who you ask.
Right. yep.
My personal opinion, I'm going to say no.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is a long time ago, a neighbor of ours told my mom that not all kids are meant to go to college. Not all kids can make it through college. And the reason she said that was because I was in college, but my sister after me, she struggled in college. And but she actually found a great job without a college degree. So my mom and dad stopped pushing that because that was a dream for them, was for all their kids to actually have a college degree. So with that in mind, there are some great nurses out there, but they are just not able to get through a four-year college degree program.
Yep. And, you know, I have a niece who went to a community college in pursuit mm-hmm. of becoming a nurse, and absolutely brilliant young woman. The fact that I have a niece that's almost 30 is making me, you know, really question my life in general. But you know, one of the things that strikes me is just the type of knowledge and care that goes into the work of being a nurse is far deeper than just, you know, the degree in of itself. And so help our listeners just understand, you know, before we get into the nitty gritty around like the contract demands, just the daily routine and the challenges that you all are dealing with and the families that you service.
Well, for your listening audience, I'm pretty sure they're well aware that University of Chicago serves the south side of Chicago. And we've always had a pediatric trauma unit. And about a year and a half, we actually opened up an adult trauma unit. So our patients that we see are coming in more complex, sicker, because now we're accepting patients who've been in motor vehicle crashes, gunshots, victims to all other kinds of violence that's coming through our doors. We're also a certified stroke center. So for patients who are experiencing a stroke in a hospital that's not a certified stroke center, we will get those patients as well as those patients who are possibly experiencing a stroke in the home. So our patients are coming in much more sicker and they're needing services much more quicker.
And, you know, when you talk about the trauma center at the University of Chicago, for our listeners who may not be aware, that was a long fight to get that trauma center at the University of Chicago, led by, you know, grassroots efforts, organizers on the south side of Chicago, young people who pushed for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's a big deal. And I think to your point that now that the trauma center exists, the conditions are. The pace in that hospital, I imagine, has certainly sped up a little bit there in terms of the volume of families that are coming through the University of Chicago.
Absolutely, because whenever someone experiences a trauma, it's not only the patient that experiences the trauma, it's their families as well. So we not only have to take care of that patient, we also have to take care of the family members. And everyone responds and reacts to a traumatic situation in a different way. And so we have to have lots of support staff on hand to help us assist those patients and their families, because not all families understand what's going on behind those trauma doors. They don't know if their loved one is alive, if their loved one is dead. They have no idea the conditions of those of their loved ones.
And nurses are balancing all of this, the care, the family. Yeah. No, I just wanted to paint that picture because I believe that there is, you know, overwhelming support for teachers and nurses. And in fact, I believe the two most trusted professions of all time are nurses and teachers. And, you know, I'm always struck by just the lack of regard and respect that management has for frontline workers. And I've had to use, you know, healthcare, and it's the nurse that you interact with Overwhelmingly, right? More, I mean, in fact, you know, even when I've had to stay overnight, you know, the doctor comes in once and you don't see them again for, I don't know, it feels like days. But that nurse that is coming in on a regular basis that's annoying you, you know, sit up, drink your water. And I say annoying in the most polite way, but you get my point that there are nurses are on it and they are coming in and out, checking you, checking on your family, making sure you're okay. And you're coming in, sometimes you are in just a very vulnerable condition and no judgment. I mean, the love and the care, like that's the reality of what patients encounter every single day that they're working with you and you know, your colleagues.
And you're absolutely right. The physicians come in and they write the orders, they make the diagnosis, but it's the nurses who carry out those orders. It's the nurses who are there to monitor the patients. It's the nurses who actually, after a conversation with the patient, realized that the doctor wasn't aware of something because they didn't have enough time to spend with that patient. So it is absolutely, it is the nurses who are the center in terms of patient care.
All right, so let's get to it. It's 2,200 of y'all that's working.
2,300 of us.
2,300, all right, my bad. 2,300, y'all deep, y'all strong over there. So let's just cut to it. What is this about? What is this about? I mean, we'll get to the date and the strike, but what is this really about, Elaine, Mister?
Well, we actually just been talking about it. The nurses at University of Chicago, we actually want the best care possible for our patients, and we want that care to be extended to them every day and on every shift. But what has been happening, because we've had this huge increase in volume and our patients are coming in sicker, we are constantly working short staff. And it's actually become the norm. And it's just a chronic issue that we want to be addressed in our new contract.
And so when you say staffing issues, and I get that as a public school teacher, I understand staffing issues in class sizes. But for those who may not be familiar with how it works, you know, when I say class size and staffing issues, if I say 20 kids in a classroom, most folks are like, okay, yeah, I get that, 20, 25 kids, 23 kids, right? How does that translate, you know, to us? Help us understand what staffing would look like for a nurse. Is that four bedrooms, four patients? Like, what does that look like?
It all depends on what is going on with the patient. For instance, if you are in a ICU, that nurse is going to have fewer patients than if you are on a regular floor. Just say, for instance, you come in and you're pretty much a normal, healthy person, but you get diagnosed with pneumonia, but you're too sick to go home. The physician wants to admit you. So if you're on a floor with other patients like you, that nurse will have, you know, more patients because you're not critically ill. So it all depends on where you are in the hospital, and it also depends on what is going on with you. So back to your example about a teacher, for instance, if you have a math class and that math class is equipped to handle 35 students, but the principal actually has 50 students signed up for this class, is he going to put another 15 desks in that room so that teacher now has the 50 students? And, oh, by the way, two of those students have special needs. Mm. So what's going to happen in that classroom with that teacher, that math teacher who's a great math teacher, with those 50 students? He's going to get frustrated. He's going to come in early, right? He's going to stay late because he's committed to his pupils. He wants the students to learn. So coming in early, staying late, that's one of the things he's going to probably do. He's going to try his best to work with the two students with special needs. But those two students with special needs take a lot of time. Therefore, he's not able to give as much time to the other students, right? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, everyone learns at a different pace, at a different way. So he's frustrated. He goes and, say, for instance, he goes and he talks to the principal. He says, you know, is there a different way to do this? You know, I'm struggling here. We're not getting the things done. My pupils are not learning. The students aren't learning because I am not. I can't put myself in 50 different ways.
Yep.
So no. It falls on deaf ears. So now you're going to have probably more likely falling test scores. You're going to have frustrated parents. You're going to have students who are going to be frustrated because they're expected to learn and they're not learning because they don't have the support that they're supposed to get.
No, you're spot on, Elaine. In fact, that's the analogy that I really was going to say, just that. You've laid it out perfectly. I mean, in fact, you know, when I think about the ICU unit, I immediately went to special education. And, mm-hmm. you know, I would say that, first of all, if you have 55 students, that's two classrooms at the most, you know, 25 kids in a classroom with a teacher's assistant. And mm-hmm. I think to your point, depending on the need of the student or the patient, it requires more care. So special education, you know, we should have even more, smaller class sizes or just more intensive services that can actually meet the needs of that student and, in your case, the patient. And so why is this difficult for the University of Chicago to understand? So I have to ask that just because, you know, we're battling this, you know, throughout, you know, the system when it comes to frontline workers, whether it's teachers, nurses, whether it's firefighters. You know, Donald Trump gives an incredible tax break to the wealthy, mm-hmm. while nurses and teachers are figuring out how to get to work early, stay late, just to meet the needs of the people in front of them. What is so difficult? Why is it so difficult for the University of Chicago to understand that the staffing ratio is important?
We don't understand that either. That is our biggest question. We have been actually in negotiations since February. And in that 7 months, we have been going back and forth about staffing ratios. We need more nurses. You cannot expect nurses to cut themselves in half to care for patients all over the unit. It just can't be done. It's not humanly possible. So in that time from January of 2017 to now, nurses have filled out 1,500 reports detailing concerns about how short staffing might lead to adverse outcomes for their patients. That's, you're looking at probably on an average of those, you know, we're pretty sure that's probably a low reporting, but we did present that to the hospital. They get those reports when the nurses fill them out. We also presented the whole 1,500 of those reports to them during our negotiations. So you're looking at about two reports filled out every day by the nurses. Why can they not understand that you need more nurses? Now, the hospital's gone up in terms of the number of patients that we have.
Yep.
So therefore, what they're doing is they are opening more rooms, which means they'll open up more nursing units. But instead of, like what we talked about in the school scenario, instead of hiring another math teacher and getting another room and splitting the room into 25 each and then adding an 8, what they're doing at University of Chicago is they're robbing Peter to pay Paul. So a unit that can handle 35 patients, that is adequately staffed with nurses to handle 35 patients, they're taking one or two of those nurses and sending them over to a newly opened unit to fill those areas. So now you have both sides where they're not adequately staffed. And short staffing leads to miscare, delay of care. You know, patients aren't getting their medications as planned. You know, they're not getting to the bathroom as they should. They're not being turned. Care is just being delayed because that nurse is now being stretched thinner to provide care to more patients or sicker patients.
Wow. And so now the contract negotiations have been going on for 7 months plus. The contract expired back in April. And yes. So now you all, as a collective body, 2,300 workers, frontline workers have decided that you need to take it up a notch. And so you all have authorized essentially what is a one-day strike. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. We only do one-day strike. We are committed to our patients, and we will only strike for one day. And it's just to send a message to the medical center that, hey, listen, these issues are important to us. They matter to us. And it's also a way for us to actually educate your listeners and the community of what actually is going on at the medical center.
773-763-9278. The voice you're listening to that you just heard was Elaine Mister. She is a 26-year nurse at the University of Chicago. She is a member of the National Nurses Union. These workers at the University of Chicago Medical Center are demanding a fair contract that speak to the needs of the patients. The University of Chicago has expanded with a trauma center that was fought and won. And as a result of that, the cases that people are experiencing, our workers at the University of Chicago's Medical Center, the cases are far more complex. The conditions are far more volatile. The needs are great, but the management is not responding. And one of the things that strikes me, though, Elaine, I promise I'm going to let you go. I know I promised you 20 minutes or so. But this conversation is so good, and people are calling in. They want to talk, too, about this. Believe it or not, there are people who are actually up this time of morning. As you know, as nurses never go to bed because you all work three shifts, right?
That's correct. We work 12-hour shifts.
12-hour shifts, and they're nonstop. And it's amazing. I'm really proud of my niece, by the way, who is working to be a nurse, and the type of care that she provides for us and the lectures she gives me now, her
great
uncle, about, you know, living a more healthy lifestyle. And I'm working on that, Bree. plant-based, absolutely. But one of the things that the management is saying is that they believe, and Elaine, I'm just going to report on what I read.
Sure.
They believe that they are offering you a better staffing ratio than you all are asking for.
No.
Okay.
Why would we have 1,500 reports filled out by nurses if they were offering us a better staffing ratio?
Yeah.
That is not correct.
Yeah.
Nurses come in, you get your assignment, and you look at your assignment, and you say, this is not a good assignment. This could be done better. But because of whatever's going on in the unit, this is the best you can do. You are then to take that to management, and you let the manager know that you're going to file a report that this could be possibly an unsafe assignment. Those forms get filed with the hospital administrator. They get reviewed, and some type of action plan is supposed to be enacted. So if that was the case, we would not have 1,500 reports filed since January of 2017.
No, it's very clear to us, and I'm just going to say that you all have our support. And I know
Thank
that
you.
There are teachers and just workers and families all over this city that believe in equity and justice. And, you know, I saw that 98% of your members voted in the affirmative. Like, you clearly have a strong collective body. Thank you all for what you do. I just have one more question for you.
Yes,
I know the
sir.
National Nurses Union has been pushing for Medicare for all, you know, basically having an opportunity for, you know, families to access, you know, a doctor and to access
yes.
medical treatment. That's something that I think shouldn't be lost in this conversation, that even a one-day strike, that you all, you know, want to have the maximum impact on the negotiations, but you don't want the patients harmed, if you will, by this. But you also recognize that patients won't get the quality of care if we don't resolve these staffing issues, which is going to create more harm. But the call for the National Nurses Union, not just to improve the working conditions, the conditions in which patients are receiving care in, they're also calling for patients to have a guaranteed right to healthcare. I think that's awesome. Just take a couple of seconds just to talk about, you know, your years of service, 26 years, and why Medicare for All is really what the country should be moving towards and what we should enact like yesterday.
Oh, sure. Okay. Well, Medicare, for those who are not familiar with it, is a federal insurance program that's offered to people over the age of 65 or with disabilities. And the push now is for Medicare for All because truth be known is that Medicare is actually very efficiently run. It's not run for profit. It is a guarantee of health care for people who have low socioeconomic status. They do not discriminate. Everyone is treated equally. You have freedom of choice because most doctors and most hospitals take Medicare. So you would never be told that you're out of network, you've got to go somewhere else, or that you've got to pay a higher deductible. There's really actually, it's transparent, I should say. So you know up front what Medicare covers and what Medicare doesn't cover. That's one of the reasons why we actually do support Medicare for All, because everyone in this country can actually have health care. And an unhealthy nation is actually, when your patients are unhealthy, it just drives up the cost, not only of health care, but it drives up the cost of everything in this country. So if we had a much healthier population, a lot of the cost in this country would actually go down. So we are for Medicare for All.
Wow. That's Elaine Mister, 26-year nurse at the University of Chicago. She is a member, proud member of the National Nurses Union. They have just authorized a strike date, and I believe that strike date is September 20th.
It's Friday, September 20th from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. We're going to have a rally at 12 noon outside of the outpatient clinics at University of Chicago at 5758 South Maryland Avenue. Your listeners and the community can come out and join us. We'll be out there all day.
We'll be on the front line. I believe the color is actually red, right?
Yes, the colors are red.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And first of all, I want to thank you and thank you for all of the work that you do. And someone who I've grown up with asthma, I grew up where I was in the hospital quite a bit up until I was about 13 years old and really as late as 15 in my early years of high school until I really started to manage it by the time I graduated from high school. And the care that nurses provided for me, my mother had a very rare heart disease, died at 50 years old. But the care that the nurses gave to our family during those very difficult times as my mother was waiting for a heart transplant, we will never forget that. And for those of you who are listening out there, I know you have similar experiences. We trust you, Elaine. We are supporting you. I will be out there Friday. I won't get out there at noon, but I will get out there and support. You know you have my complete support. And thank you for everything that you all are doing.
Oh, thank you so much. And we want to actually just say to you that we are so grateful for all the support you've given us. You have supported us through our rallies, our pickets, our press conferences, and it is greatly appreciated. So we look forward to seeing you on Friday the 20th. And we do thank you so much for your support.
All right. Thank you. That's Elaine Mister. She is a longtime nurse at the University of Chicago. There is a strike date that has been set by the National Nurses Union, fighting for staff ratios that are manageable, fighting for the care that our families deserve. And, you know, I think as we transition into our next topic, I need to take a break here, and I want folks to call in and weigh in on this conversation. I don't think it's unreasonable, you all. This is not unreasonable. As our nurses are fighting for staffing ratios that are going to allow for, the patients that they service to have the quality care that they deserve. And at a time in which tax breaks are being given to the wealthiest people in the world, it's not unreasonable for working class families to be supported, and the patients and the people that require our support, that those conditions are conducive to the quality of care that they deserve. It's the Santita Jackson Show. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to some other folks who are fighting for a contract. Don't go anywhere. It's WCPT Progressive Talk Radio. It's where the facts matter. And my name is Brandon Johnson, filling in for Santita Jackson. We're just getting started, y'all.
Mm-hmm.